Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm joined by co-host Brendan Kleene, both right for Bright Side of the Sun. And today, we're back after a couple days out of town, recapping the last two games for the Suns. They're actually 2-0 without Devin Booker over these last two. They beat the Dallas Mavericks last night, 97-91 in Dallas. And in Minnesota, they beat them 108-106, led by the three-headed monster so far of Isaiah Cannon, Dragan Bender, and Alex Len, which is pretty surprising to me. Really, any takeaways from you so far outside of those three? I mean, for me, that's probably my main takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting kind of like bigger picture thing for me has been the, I don't really know how much you want to call like a changed offense, but Suns reporters on the broadcast and Scott Bordeaux from the Republic have been kind of talking about they implemented like three or four new plays and they've been running different types of things over the last few. The thing that confused me was why it took a few games, maybe just the practice schedule and whatnot, but that's been interesting to me just, watching them on the court. But as far as like performances go, I'm really surprised and puzzled by the Isaiah Cannon, Mike James situation. And then, it's what Alex Len's been doing is kind of undeniable at this point. He's been ridiculously kind of almost dominant, you'd say.
Yeah, I saw, shout out to Chris Hansen on Twitter, he posted a really interesting stat with Alex Len today. It said, guys that played under 25 minutes have averaged 9 points and 9 rebounds per game plus one block is Hassan Whiteside before he broke out in Miami, and also Bill Walton. So, really, it's definitely interesting to see how Alex Len's done this so far. He's done off the second unit, done pretty well. I'm still rather shocked and surprised by Treon not letting him get any run with the starters yet. I think that's the next step with Len, because at this point, I feel like he's pretty earned himself a starting spot.
Yeah, I think it's weird that I think the biggest thing, the reason for doing that, at least just from my point of view, would be that they really glue Chandler and Chris and Bender and Len together, respectively. So I think he likes what those pairs do. I don't necessarily know why. I haven't seen anything except for maybe that Chris helps the fact that Chandler isn't even really a post threat, so maybe the fact that Len and Bender both can kind of operate in space a little bit better, whereas when you have Chandler on the court, you really would rather have Chris there, who defenses tend to respect more from the perimeter. But maybe that's changing too, because Bender has been so solid from three the past couple nights that maybe you just start to rethink that as well, and that makes it easier to put Len in the starting rotation. I'm not sure.
Now, this is pretty early to say with how they've done so far with Isaiah Cannon. It's been like a really surprising just 180 with Isaiah Cannon so far. But when you talk about those two guys with Dragan Bender and Alex Len, do you feel like if this continues, let's say tomorrow night and they play the Clippers, and let's say Cannon and Bender and Len do it again for the third straight game in a row, do you feel like Bender and Len should replace Chris and Chandler in the starting lineup, just flip those guys around? Or do you feel like the second unit's like really catching fire right now and these guys should stay together for a while?
Yeah, I think that's a hard thing just in general. I don't envy Triano having to make that call, but I think on a young team, I don't know, for me it always seems like the starter bench kind of thing in general, like we saw it. The thing that comes to mind from this season is Carmelo Anthony with the Thunder, where in on media day and during training camp, people were talking to him about the possibility of him coming off the bench, and it became like a meme. Even the idea of asking Carmelo Anthony to come off the bench was just laughable. But that's more of like a reputation thing, a like respect and honor kind of. It's a little BS, I think, sometimes. But in that case, it makes a little bit of sense. But on a team like this, like, I don't really think that designation makes too much of a difference. That's, I think, true. That Len's probably earned, more than anything, the thing that I've been thinking is Len's earned the ability to not be included in the crappy three-man whatever that's been going on, and maybe has kind of put more pressure on the front office to make a move to get one of those guys out of Phoenix, because he's playing well enough that, A, you're winning, you're going to be winning and competing better when he's on the court every night, and B, he should be getting, like you're saying, those starters minutes. He should be playing more minutes in general. So both of those things, just you got to get that situation figured out. And that's been my biggest thing with that whole deal.
Now, this is a very hypothetical question, and really with Ryan McDonough, you can't rule this out at all, because he loves to pull that tank button whenever he wants to, like we saw last year with sitting Eric Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler and Brandon Knight and all those guys. But let's say that he wants to get rid of this three-headed situation at the big spot with Monroe, Chandler, and Len. Even though it's a really bad call, so to say, but do you feel like Alex Len could actually be the guy that draws the most value over the next couple weeks, and McDonough is the one that trades Len away instead to actually help them lose more games?
Well, Len can't be traded
Oh, that's right. Until
because
when?
of the qualifying offer, because he accepted that, so it makes him unable, just, I don't know, the mechanisms of, I guess, you're taking that last ditch, like, kind of risk with the final year of your contract with your team, then I guess you could get the added security of not moving in that situation. So yeah, Alex Len's unable to be traded, which is a bizarre wrinkle to all of it, because yeah, I think as far as value goes, if you're saying, none of these three guys are part of our future, let's see what we can get from, trading one of them or multiple, then that adds a whole different thing to it, because you can't trade the one who's been doing the best. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was the case, so that's definitely interesting to watch moving forward. But let's dive in real quick to Isaiah Cannon. He's been by far the biggest sparker these last couple games, and really the biggest surprise for me over the entire season. He just came in, had one game with the NAZ Suns, and he's posted an average of 16 points, 5 assists, 6 rebounds over his last two games. So what's up with Isaiah Cannon, Brendan? Because really, I don't know how to explain it.
I think it's just the opportunity. I mean, I think he's just a little bit more versatile of an offensive player at this point than Mike James. And, we saw Mike James have really nice scoring nights as well. I think maybe the ability, Cannon is a better shooter, I think we can say. And then I think he's shown himself over the past few games with the Suns to be a better distributor than James had been earlier in the year. But I think that, I don't know, it's a little unfair to James, because I feel like he felt pressure to come in and do what he did best, which was just score, coming in on that two-way deal. So I think maybe that he could be a little better of a playmaker than he was at the beginning of the year. But I think that's been the biggest difference, is just Cannon making these kind of ragtag bunch of guys that have been having to play bigger roles without Booker. He's making life easier for them, and that's just made the whole team kind of chug along a little better. The Timberwolves game, it's just ridiculous to look at the discrepancy between the bench plus minus and the starter plus minus. It's like exactly flipped. Each guy is in the plus 20 range on the bench, and on the starting unit, it's like minus 20. So his impact has been incredible, and I think that's the biggest reason why.
Now with Mike James though, Cannon was signed under an injury exception, this or whatever it was called, injury exception, I believe, with the Devin Booker injury. He'll be back around Christmas time or so, and that means Cannon could be on the roster until Christmas. He could be cut if they don't want to cut anyone else. Do you feel like Mike James, if Cannon continues this performance, do you think he's going to earn him a spot in that rotation ahead of James? And do you feel like James might be the odd man out, even though he just signed a new deal?
Yeah, I think that more and more it's looking like, just because of how quick they were to kind of not move on. Mike James he played in the Wolves game. Let's see. Oh, no, he did not. He played in the Mavericks game. I'm sorry. 9 minutes. And so I think that they're still going to kind of tinker with that. I'm unsure of what's going on. But just in general, I think that it makes it seem more and more like that James contract might have just been, let's get a full season of experience with him, of having him in the room and being able to, whatever kinds of things that they do to evaluate players, they have a full season of it, rather than having to make that decision and either cut him or send him down to lesser competition, which he clearly has shown himself to be better than in the G League. So just the fact that they're already moving on to Cannon makes it seem like maybe James isn't a part of their long-term future as much as it might have seemed like when they made such a quick decision on him on that two-way deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty surprising to me because they put all that trust in Mike James. McDonough was talking him up a lot on local radios, and even we were there at Dwayne Casey's pregame. He was the first guy that mentioned in their pregame scouting reports, Mike James. So to see him kind of go to this is kind of surprising at this point. But going towards the Timberwolves game real quick, I wanted to dive into a little bit of the game action here. 108-106 was the final score for the Suns in that one. Let's touch on Dragan Bender a little bit here. He was 6 of 10, 5 of 8 from 3-point range, plus 22. And 17 points in 30 minutes. It was his last game in the mask. So, do you feel like Bender's starting to find his stroke a little bit, or do you feel like that duo with him and Bender, also known as the Blender, is really kind of taking over with him at comfortability at this point? Because I know Treon kind of mentioned it a little bit at the early beginning of the season with him trying to get more comfortability. Maybe he's most comfortable with the second unit. So, maybe this Len Bender thing is kind of working out best for everyone involved.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that kind of handoff stuff, running more action off of screens, having ball handlers, kind of circling through the half court has helped Bender quite a bit because I think that that's the role maybe that we expected him to play. So the fact that he can get the ball at the elbow, hand off, flank out to the 3-point line, kind of just feel out the offense a little bit more rather than being like a pick and pop specific kind of guy or anything like that. It's really helped him a lot. And then in that Wolves game, we saw Len had 6 assists. So, I mean, it looks like in that situation, it was definitely helping him too. So maybe, yeah, I don't see the problem really with having the rules the way that they are.
Yeah, I mean, moving forward, how they are, obviously, I think the Suns are 11, not 11-13. I think, yeah, 11-13 under Triano when Len and Booker both play. So I think that's a pretty interesting stat to bring up. But another guy I wanted to bring up in a negative sense over the last few games has been Marquese Chriss. Played 16 minutes against the Timberwolves, had 4 fouls. I think against the Mavericks, he played only about 18 minutes. 18 minutes, he had 4 fouls as well. So he's starting to get back in that old ways that we saw in Summer League that was very concerning. What's your take on Marquise? Because I feel like over these last couple of weeks, he's really regressed.
Yeah, I think that this is kind of maybe the biggest takeaway you can draw from the Bookerless stretch here, which has been 6 games now, is the, like I just said, all of those things about Bender where, you know, and it remains to be seen what style fits this team best. That'll be determined by what coach ends up taking over next season and beyond, and what kinds of players they put around Booker in the future. But I don't imagine that if I think this is just to say, this is probably the system that Triano feels most comfortable operating. I think this is a lot of what we were expecting to see when Watson and Triano came over and had a lot of the Portland influence. Those types of plays are exactly what you would see McCollum and Lillard run in Portland. Catching the ball off of screens and getting handed the ball off of like those dribble handoffs, like I was saying, just a lot of motion around the offense, guys screening for each other in different unique ways and things like that. And so Booker could fit into that, I think, but I don't know if Chris does. And so you're seeing that Bender, Booker, Warren, a lot of those players make a ton of sense in the system, but Chris has not looked comfortable at all. Because I just don't think he has a feel for the game yet that makes him able to make those kinds of decisions or play that finesse type of style. I think he just looks lost a lot of the time still, you know.
Now, is it fair to ask this? He was a minus 27 against the Timberwolves. He was a minus 17 against the Mavs, the worst on both nights for the Suns. I've noticed a lot over the last couple of games as far as his assertiveness goes on offense. Do you feel like he's kind of settling for long-range jumpers and his perimeter shots a lot more compared to last season?
I don't know. Yeah, because I think he's been a lot more comfortable playing in the post defensively. I think he's starting to know how to use his body, as I've been mentioning often. That really has genuinely impressed me compared to last season. Just the way that he's been able to defend bigger players more often than not, he's at least had some success relative to last year when he just would foul. But then you look at the numbers, I mean, even just the surface numbers. You know, he's the just as far as the fouling goes defensively, he's still at 5.3 per 36. He was at 5.4 last year. It doesn't really add up to that much of a difference. And then he's shooting, you know, if you were worried about his offense last year, he's shooting 39% overall from the field and 28% from three. That both are down quite a bit from last year. And so I'm just, yeah, I mean, it is definitely getting to that point with Chris, where he didn't fit well when they were running more pick and roll, running a lot of stuff in transition, and he's not fitting now when they're trying to run more structured offense with Booker out. So, you know, if he still struggles on defense and he still can't really fit into any type of offense that they're trying, what the heck do you have? And then, you know, add that to the questions about Josh Jackson, and you're now up to two guys who you still kind of are puzzled by at the very least, and it's frustrating, I think, if you're a Suns fan, if you're someone in the front office, to have these two guys kind of both really fitting out right now.
Now, this is obviously very early to ask this question, and maybe not, so to say, if McDonough doesn't do what he can over the next summer to improve this team, but If he swings and misses on Marquise Chriss and Dragan Bender trading up to get two top 8 picks in that 2016 draft to help out Booker, and both those guys bust out, like Dave King had a really good article today. He compared them to maybe Jan Vesely and Tyrus Thomas as far as like their overall stats so far in their careers. So do you feel like if those two, if that's their ceilings and that's what actually happens, do you think that's the final nail in the coffin for McDonough as his contract, or do you feel like that's maybe a little too short-sighted?
I think that we've seen enough from Bender where I start to think maybe that you at least can see the type of impact he could have eventually as like almost like a 3-and-D big with some playmaking upside. And I think that that's probably what, you know, his archetype was when he came into the draft. I think that he's starting at least to show flashes of that type of player. But yeah, Chris looks like it's still a long uphill thing for him, and he's played more minutes by far than Bender has with all those starts last year, playing all 82 games last season. So it doesn't look good. As far as McDonough goes, I feel like I can't imagine a situation in which with Sarver finally showing that faith in his GM and paying for that contract extension and, you know, at least playing nice with the rebuilding narrative at that press conference when James Jones was hired. I would be surprised if he didn't make it through at least into next season and beyond, just because I think that's almost a bigger scare than missing out on these draft picks would be to fire the GM who did it all. So I don't know if, you know, he's obviously the guy to blame having made those trades and having scouted that way. But overall, I don't know if it really ends up falling on McDonough like that.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because really it does fall around the front office. And really it is kind of early because Chris is still only 20 years old. But the warning signs are starting to come up a little bit more and more. It's starting to worry a little bit more as each game goes by. But let's touch really quick on number 4 pick in this year's draft, Josh Jackson. He had 13 points in 22 minutes against the Timberwolves. Then against the Dallas Mavericks, he had 7 points on only 3 of 11 shooting. So he went back to his shooting woes, but he had 3 blocks in that game as well in 23 minutes. So what have you seen out of Jackson in his last 2 games?
I was optimistic that the offensive changes might benefit him too, just because as far as the shooting goes, you think maybe if he's catching and shooting or kind of shooting off of screens like that, it might help his jumper kind of balance out. Maybe the fact that he's not, you know, pulling up or throwing up these wild shots in transition might help him overall, but it hasn't looked like that so far, and so that's been the biggest takeaway for me.
Yeah, I mean, for me with Jackson, he's had a very up-and-down stretch so far this year. He's had a lot of shooting woes, a lot of defensive mistakes, but you overall, you see the potential on both sides there with Jackson. He's a very good cutter. He's a very good defender on ball. So hopefully, I think around like maybe January or February, we're going to start seeing a little turn of the corner for Jackson. I think we're starting to see it a lot defensively. But I think over these next couple months, it's going to be very important as far as Josh Jackson's development goes. I think he's one of the key guys in this overall core 4 they have right now that has to hit, at least from McDonough's point of view. But Brennan, hitting it back on you real quick with Daniel House Jr., he's another guy I want to touch on real quick before we go into the point guard situation again. Because really, he's kind of surprised me these past couple games. He's been a plus defender, really, and been one of the better plus-minus guys so far. And really, his fit with Bender and Len's been really splendid so far.
Yeah, that bench unit's actually pretty fun to watch, I think. And House has been – all I really thought about him was that he was a shooting type of guy. I had a similar impression of him as, you know, anybody like a Troy Daniels or just that kind of player that hasn't really found a niche in the NBA outside of being able to hit a three-point shot. But I – probably did not know enough about him, which, okay, that's fine, because I've learned plenty watching him, which is that he has crazy defensive upside. I think the fact that he can move so quick and have a really big frame, I mean, his shoulders just look like, if you're driving into that guy, you're probably pretty intimidated, and the results have shown up. I think that he's been a big part of their defensive success with Bender and Len. I think that unit has a lot of potential to even grow defensively out. You know, maybe it kind of gets back to normal once Jackson soaks up Daniel's minutes again after Booker returns, and then that, you know, puts Jackson in that unit as well. So I'm interested to see kind of how that goes and how it falls. The one number or guy, I guess, that I wanted to pinpoint was Daniels, actually. Within these six games without Hooker, he's at 15 points per game even. 51% from the field, 46% from three, and he's a plus 4.2. And he took a way bigger load on offense. He's running pick and roll. He's finishing at the rim. When Booker was in, he really was just a spot-up guy, and he would be, you know, sometimes not even crack 10 minutes. So he's been a really big part of their success, too, that I don't think should go underestimated.
Oh, for sure. He's definitely, alongside TJ Warren, he's filled in pretty well as the secondary scoring option so far. And over these last six games, he has, like Brendan said, averaged 15 points per game. And he's been, as we've all known since his Memphis days and his Houston days, one of the best overall sharpshooters from behind the arc in the NBA. But looking ahead to when Devin Booker returns with Troy Daniels, I think it's really interesting to think about the possibility of him running the point guard, Booker, with Troy Daniels out there at the same time to get him even more shooting. Do you feel like that's a good possibility to happen? Because, I mean, I feel like Daniels has really shown that he's actually a capable defender when he's given the option.
Yeah, I think he's the kind of guy that can, you know, at least guard his man one-on-one. I think, well, you get to be a veteran and you get to play in all these different systems and, you know, with different coaches, I just feel like you see a lot of these players where they maybe don't have the reputation early in their career, but you know, you're not going to stick around in the league, even in the G League, probably for as long as he has without being able to at least hold your own. So I don't think that there's as many situations where he's really breaking down at the point of attack or anything like that, like you would have expected just based on kind of the reputation he had around the league. I think maybe it hurt him that he was on almost, you know, playoff contender type of teams in Memphis and Houston. But when I talked to Triano at practice, it was before Booker went down. I think it was right after the Pelicans game, actually, toward the end of November. Triano said that he didn't really see another way for, you know, if Booker was truly going to actually be playing and defending point guard in games without Ulis or James, or I guess, you know, now Cannon on the court, that the only way he saw that being possible, the only way he had really looked at as far as how the rotation could play out, would be next to Daniel. So we didn't I don't remember ever seeing that. Do you?
No, I don't think we have seen that yet. And I feel like, I think it'd be a really good pairing, to be honest. As far as the shooting
would be terrifying.
No, for sure. Yeah.
So I'm interested to see if he pulls that out. I think we'll be seeing like a slow return for Booker, probably, just because, you know, they really shouldn't be risking anything long term with him for this silly injury in December of a losing season. I would hope that they're not, you know, pulling him back right away, but maybe, you know, January they start to pull out some different stuff and play the younger players more and just kind of see what they have in each guy. Maybe we'll see it then. And I think it'd be interesting if Daniels is still on the roster and things are kind of still looking the way that they are, because, you know, it would add another dimension to the offense.
Now, it's interesting you bring that up, because Davon Reed scheduled a return around the beginning of the year, and Troy Daniels is having his best stretch maybe as a pro so far. So how would you decipher them playing together? Because I feel like Reed is a two guard, but he can play three, can play spot one at times. We saw that in the draft workouts when he was in Phoenix. So how do you feel like Davon Reed's going to throw a wrench into this with Troy Daniels? Because I feel like maybe Troy Daniels can stay around. McDonough said on 98.7 earlier this week that he would like Daniels to stay around. He's under contract through the 2019 season. But how would you play Booker and Reed and Warren once Reed returns and Daniels?
I think it would be just as interesting, yeah, if you had all three of them, one through three, on the court. I just feel like one of the things that I'm struggling with is we can't know really, or at least it hasn't been really asked yet. I don't know what the answer is, but we don't really know why Triano isn't being more adventurous. We've seen basically, since he's taken over, we've seen basically none of Chris and Bender in the front court together. We just haven't seen a lot of the stuff that the adventurous, you know, really like, let's just see what happens types of lineups that you may have been kind of dreaming about when you saw all these names on the same roster. So I'm, you know, it might not happen the way that we hope with these guys playing like this, but I think Reed's probably his position long term is going to be the two. So that one is one that actually does make sense to me. Just it's going to be based on how he looks when he gets back, if he's healthy, and how big of a load he can handle. But I would be surprised if we didn't see that. I mean, that's a lineup that you'd hope could be a really big part of your future.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, with the spacing and shooting that I'd provide, that'd be a really deadly trio for sure. But looking ahead, I wanted to touch on TJ Warren in the overall offense before we go into the LA Clippers preview we had for you guys. But TJ Warren over his last two games, he has 15 points against the Minnesota Timberwolves. He has 19 points against the Mavericks. But he's also, it looks like he's kind of slowing down as far as his offense goes. He's carrying the number one scoring option. He hasn't reached 20 points for these over this weekend. And it seems like he's kind of running out of gas as far as the number one option goes. Do you see that same sentiment?
Yeah, it kind of looks, I mean, unfortunately, kind of looks like the years that he's had in the past, which is a little disappointing, but I don't know if you can necessarily blame him. He's never had that role before, and I don't think that it's something he, I mean, he had it at NC State, right? But that was against mid-major defenses in college. He hasn't had that role in the NBA, and I don't think he ever really will. So, I don't know how much you hold it against him, but it has been a little bit disappointing because I think, you know, you expect from like a really aggressive physical scorer like that, you'd think, oh, no other scoring option. He's just going to go ram into guys, shoot 25 times a game, and who cares what happens. And I think we saw that the first few nights. Maybe it just made him tired. Maybe he's holding his energy when Booker does come back. I don't know. I mean, they've been traveling a lot too, so, but for sure, it's been a little odd and disappointing.
Yeah, real quick on Warren and also the overall offense. I mean, Warren might be struggling right now, but is it a positive sign? Maybe, just maybe they turned the corner the Suns have with Triano, because we've seen Alex Len have a dynamic 3-game stretch. We've seen Dragan Bender take over his portion. He's doing a very good job. Isaiah Cannon stepping up, Troy Daniels stepping up, and really Tyler Ulis had his moments, so is Josh Jackson and a couple other guys, but do you feel like this team, once Booker returns, do you feel like they might turn the corner here? Because once they have their primary scorer back, I mean, it's fair to say the Suns might have been on a 6-game win streak if Booker was healthy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've been in every game, which has been almost the most surprising part because they are, I mean, hate to put a damper on it, but they have been pretty miserable to watch some nights. I mean,
Oh,
you
for
and I were
sure.
both at that Toronto, or on, yeah, the Toronto game and that San Antonio game I missed, but I saw it obviously on TV, and it's been real rough here and there, but they've been playing hard. I mean, that's the one thing you can't argue with, and the thing that maybe makes you most optimistic about Triano long term, because he's getting this team of random dudes playing roles they're not comfortable with to stay in games against the Wolves, the Raptors, the Wizards, the Spurs. Those are all upper tier playoff teams, and they've either beaten or come close to beating all of them. And then, yeah, I mean, we probably should hit on that report from Scott Bourdeau over the weekend of Len and Booker both coming out vocally to him and saying that they are supporting Triana. I mean, I don't know what that really means. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, where you think that actually ends up when the off season comes around. But it is interesting that not only are they playing this well over this stretch, but they're also kind of starting to grow fond of the coach.
Yeah, I mean, from Alex Len's perspective, I would be vouching for Triano because, I mean, he's having a career year under Triano. Ever since he's taken over, he's definitely stepped up his game. But I feel like it's maybe a bad situation to do this again, because I remember when Earl Watson was the interim coach and Devin Booker started speaking up, he said, "I want him around." And then all of a sudden, a year and a half later, the team seems like it almost quit on Watson because of it seemed like maybe his act was running thin with the guys. So maybe I kind of want to see them vet their own process and actually interview guys. And definitely Triano deserves an interview, but I think there might be better candidates out there long term for this roster to help build them, like David Fizdale or someone else along his lines. Like, do you feel, I definitely Jay Triano deserves an interview, but how do you see that playing out?
I think, yeah, I would really be frustrated if they weren't to get a pretty, I mean, I want there to be a lot of aims. Let's just put it that way. Like, I want to hear, as crazy and wild as what ASU just went through with their head football coach, I want to hear, I maybe don't want the result to be the same, but I want it to be something like that where they're thinking outside the box, finding guys that they had, you know, that they didn't the last time, because there were no names last time and they ended up with somebody that they fired a year and a half later. So I just think this one, they really just need to be more, I don't know, extensive, I guess, to put it in one word, because I think Triano's done a great job, but you know, he was an assistant that got fired once already on a team with a similar situation, kind of rebuilding, and so I think he's done a really great job, and I think the lessons that the team's learning are probably pretty valuable just based on how well that they've responded without Booker and how much development we've seen from players here and there. But yeah, I just think it's too early to say something like that. So I'm honestly just surprised that, especially Booker, considering that we've been so impressed with the stretch when he's been out. But when he was in, I think that there was a time when we were starting to get a little bit frustrated. So the fact that even he has seen enough and experienced enough to make him feel that way is the more surprising part, because I think you're right about Len.
Yeah, it's definitely been a lot of peaks and valleys under Triano, that's for sure. We've seen a lot of blowout games. Like, the game was over after the first half against Detroit, and then against Toronto, that was mostly not a good game until the very end there. So there's definitely a very good moments, but very bad moments with this Suns this season. But like you said, I want some out-of-the-box names, not exactly like Herm Edwards type, but something like Fizdale, something like maybe Kevin McHale, or names like that make a lot of sense for this young roster, because we touched on this a lot on the podcast, but I'll bring it back up real quick for you, Brendan. Do you feel like the coach, I mean, there's definitely one more draft pick, maybe one big move to make, but I think the coach is probably the most important aspect of this entire situation going into next season. They need to hit on that.
I think so. I mean, I think that there's examples every year of, because what do we say when we see even just young rosters come together, but especially star rosters? And I think the Suns eventually hope that they're in position to be doing that. Maybe this coach that they hire in the summer isn't the one to do that, but you want that guy to be in place as long as possible. You should be thinking about things this way. We always say, I mean, Oklahoma City this year is a great example of a team that, you know, we see all these names on paper. We've never seen them play, even with similar types of guys as the ones that they're going to be joining. And then we say, oh, well, it'll take time to gel, and you will have to see how it fits. What is all the gelling and the fitting is all based on what happens with the coach. And now we're already hearing people blaming Billy Donovan and being frustrated with that situation. And that's all because of the coach, right? And Scott Brooks got fired in Oklahoma City that Donovan could take over because the stars wouldn't work together. So, I mean, it's obviously a very big deal. I think it's maybe a little less pressure than something like the draft, because you can just fire one and move on to the next guy. You can't just draft, you know, Alex Len and then cut Alex Len and you just get a new guy right in there that's just as talented, which can happen in coaching. So I think it's a little less, but you also lose, you know, every season that you have a bad coach in place or one that doesn't gel with the roster is lost development time. So it's obviously a really important decision.
For sure, yeah. I feel like definitely whoever the next coach is has to bring this roster together, because at this point we're almost year 7, year 8, I believe now, going on without the playoffs in Phoenix. So it's definitely got to change around here soon. But real quick, before we let you guys go, let's touch on the LA Clippers game real quick. The last time that the Suns were in Los Angeles, that was the last game Earl Watson was head coach. They lost by, I believe, 42 points, and that was with Milos Teodosic and Blake Griffin, all those guys still healthy. So this time around, Blake Griffin's not around. Milos is back. Danilo might be back. I think he's questionable for the game. So how do you see this one playing out? Because I feel like it might honestly be another game where the Suns could pull one off.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a surprise. The Clippers are really in a bad situation. They have this is their starting lineup from the Spurs, I think, 2 nights ago. So DeAndre Jordan, Milos Teodosic, Austin Rivers, those guys we all know. CJ Williams and Jamil Wilson. I have honestly never heard of either one of those players before this season. I only saw CJ Williams because he started playing a little while ago for them. I didn't know Jamil Wilson was on their team. I think that one of those guys might be a two-way player, and I'm honestly embarrassed that we don't know who they are, but at the same time, I think it goes to show the situation in LA right now. So I think it's going to be a pretty ugly game, as theirs have been. I haven't even watched them since Griffin went down, but they just have a bunch of guys, a bunch of really young players. I think it's a game I could see Warren doing pretty well in. They don't really have much wing defense. They don't really have a lot of traditional wings in general. So maybe that's a bounce back game for him. That was the first thing that I had been thinking the past couple nights is, you know, that could be a good situation for him to kind of get back to form right as Booker starts to practice again.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the Clippers roster as well, that second unit, maybe outside of Lou Williams, I think the Suns bench is actually better than theirs already. I mean, if you add in Cannon, Len, and Bender, I think those three could have another big day against the Clippers, and I think maybe Josh Jackson could break out against these guys, because I think he has a favorable matchup if he's playing at some twos and threes for the Clippers. So We'll see how that one moves going forward. But real quick, I want before I let you go, Brennan, I want a quick prediction out of you with McDonough, because the trade deadline for the guys that just signed was December 15th, and I don't think we talked about it since that date's come by. But do you think that McDonough's gonna make a move over the next couple weeks? Let's say around Christmas. Do you think he makes any sort of move to help out this team or make this team worse?
I don't know. I don't think. I think after what we saw with the situation with Tyson Chandler coming out, where there was some reporting on how part of the deal was that he wanted to be a free agency deal 3 summers ago was that he wanted to be close to the West Coast. He would fly. He does fly to California often to be with his mother, and that was important for him. And that's part of the reason he's been missing games for, you know, personal reasons when the team is at home. And I think maybe part of the reason that he was comfortable with the decision last year to sit him. So I don't think he's going. So I think that narrows it down to Monroe. And if, you know, McDonough's been saying things, I didn't hear that interview about Daniels, but that makes, you know, kind of throws a wrench in that too. So I think you're down to Dudley and Monroe, the way that I see it. And so I would not be surprised. I think those guys are kind of just ticking time bombs at this point. I think they're both couldn't go any day. I wouldn't be surprised as we, you know, every day we get closer to February, I would imagine we're going to hear more rumors about those two specifically. And so, yeah, I mean, it does open up a whole lot of opportunities, but I also think Bordeaux reported recently that the Suns didn't see that December 15th date of the last summer's free agents becoming available via trade as some sort of indicator for them. I don't think that there was any, like, but they're also, you know, who knows what that really means if they're going to actually say something like that publicly. But it was interesting to me that they specifically said, like, no, it doesn't change anything for us. So maybe they're not close, and maybe they're riding this wave of success because it's been like a lot of the good losses mixed in with the occasional win, but I don't think they've really damaged their lottery odds. So maybe they're happy with where they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting because Greg Monroe has been the guy that's been DMP CD for the past couple games, and the Suns look the best with Monroe off the floor, actually. I think they're 2-9 when Monroe actually plays, so I think it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward with Monroe's value, because I think it's not that good right now. So I'll try to see if they fetch maybe a second rounder out of him, or even if they move him at this point. I don't think they might even move him because he seems pretty content with riding the bench making $17 million, so I don't know. We'll see how that goes over the next couple months, but we'll definitely be back with you guys tomorrow night after we play the Clippers. The Suns do. They'll be around, I think, 6:30 AZ time. So we'll be back with you guys following tomorrow's game, and we'll see you then.